Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abell. Gentlemen.
Good day, Mark. How are you doing?
Doing great, thank you.
Good. This week, we're going to talk about something that's relatively common. Lots of myths and misconceptions about polycystic ovary syndrome. Just a little background before we get to the study that you're going to talk us through. The background is that polycystic ovary syndrome is a condition associated classically with multiple cysts on the ovaries. During each menstrual cycle, these ovaries release an egg into the uterus, and this ovulation occurs once a month. Now, the problem in polycystic ovary syndrome is that many follicles are produced, and often they don't develop enough or mature enough to release an egg, meaning that this ovulation doesn't take place. The production of hormones then becomes unbalanced, particularly with raised levels of male hormone, testosterone. Approximately 1 in 10 American women have some degree of polycystic ovary syndrome. Some of these have been referred on to ultrasound, and maybe a quarter of those are found to have cysts on their ovaries. It's now recognized as a common cause of ovarian failure. It's often associated with clinical symptoms like hirsutism, irregular menses, but it also is associated with infertility. This week, Mark's going to ask us what are the key signs and symptoms for the diagnosis of polycystic ovary syndrome, and perhaps I'll also ask Mark to help us identify how important it is that we really diagnose this clinically. Mark, what did the authors of this study published in the Canadian Family Physician find?
Well, I really like this kind of study, first of all. When we're doing diagnosis, it's too often left to our intuition and gut instinct, and we end up wasting a lot of effort and time gathering information that ends up being either irrelevant or even misleading. In this study, the authors recruited patients who were referred to an endocrinology clinic for evaluation of suspected PCOS. Now, this is a limitation of the study since these patients have already been filtered by their primary care physicians who made the referral. So the probability of PCOS in this group is probably higher than that in our primary care populations in internal medicine or family practice. But anyway, the patients in this group completed a detailed questionnaire, lots of questions, and they were then evaluated by an endocrinologist who was blinded to the survey results. That endocrinologist made the final diagnosis after doing their testing and applying standard NIH criteria. Half of the 100 patients in the first group had PCOS, half didn't. They found that there were 4 predictors from the questionnaire that best predicted PCOS. They took those 4 questions, asked them of a second group of about 120 patients, about a third of whom had PCOS, and they found that it was actually a very accurate little screening tool. For the 4 predictors are, the first one is average duration of a menstrual cycle more than 34 days, or that it's totally variable and unpredictable. The second is 3 or more sites of dark, coarse hair. The third is obesity between the ages of 16 and 40. And the fourth is not having a history of galactorrhea outside of pregnancy or recent childbirth. And if patients had 2 or more of those factors, they were likely to have PCOS with a positive likelihood ratio of 13.
Wow.
That's good. That's an impressive likelihood ratio. Remember, anything over 5 is pretty good, and over 10 is very good. On the other hand, those with less than 2 factors were unlikely to have the diagnosis. The negative likelihood ratio was 0.24, which isn't bad either. So as you were saying, if we assume that about 25% of primary care patients with suspected PCOS actually have the diagnosis, those with 2 or more positive predictors in that setting have about an 80% chance of the diagnosis. And if they have less than 2, they only have about a 7% chance. Pretty useful information. Really lets us focus our history. We need to make sure we ask those questions. And you don't have to carry a calculator around in your head. I mean, this is the sort of thing that could be programmed. But I think just knowing what to focus on, and that patients who have more of these symptoms are much more likely to have the diagnosis, certainly those with none or only 1 of these symptoms are pretty unlikely, can help us tailor the further workup.
If you've got an 80% probability of somebody having a disease after you ask these questions, you know, that's far higher probability than most of us have when we treat illnesses. What do you think? Can we go on and begin treatment of these, or do we now need to confirm with endocrine studies and perhaps ultrasound and things?
Yeah, you always ask the hard questions, Mike. Gosh. You know, I think that it, I'll keep going back to this, but it depends on the patient and the setting. You know, if I'm have a patient where it's a significant financial burden to get an ultrasound to do a referral, or I'm in a very rural setting where it's going to be a challenge to either get the testing or to get the referral done. You know, for example, here, even in our town of almost 100,000 people, we have exactly one endocrinologist.
Wow.
And so if you don't happen to like him or have, you know, want to, you know, go see him, you're out of luck. So
well, forget even if you do like him and want to see him, your chance of getting an appointment in this year is pretty small.
Yeah, so, you know, I think in a situation like this and where the treatment is relatively benign, you know, we're talking about perhaps starting metformin, for example,
right.
Then it might not be unreasonable to just try an empiric trial of treatment. I think generally, given our society and where we are, probably you'd want to get an ultrasound to try and confirm the diagnosis. You know, maybe check the you know, testosterone levels and LH and FSH and all those things. But I think wouldn't be unreasonable, given especially if someone had three or four of these characteristics, to try an empiric trial.
Well, if I'm not here next week for our poem, it's because I've gone to start my endocrine fellowship, so I can move to Athens, Georgia, and compete with that one endocrinologist.
We could use you. Thanks.
Anyways, that's all the time we have, Mark. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Take care, Mark.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Bye.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.